Right, in episode two, we had Ashley Williams, and then followed in episode four with Chris Dixon. Ashley's now a key contributor to Match of the Day and upcoming Euro 2020 BBC coverage. Dicko is now a champion of non-league. Is that a coincidence? Nah, I don't think so. No wonder we're the premier non-league podcast. Anyway, welcome to episode 16.
This is the Premier Non-League Podcast.
So, James, Trevor, Pete, Ian, all on the line tonight. Johnny and Chris is playing cricket somewhere. But we have got a very special guest and someone we're really proud to have on, Chris Dixon, who is now a champion of the FA Trophy. Chris, welcome back to the Premier Non-League Podcast. How you doing, mate? On cloud good, nine, I assume.
Good evening. I'm trying to scrape off the ceiling, I think. So just trying to get myself down. But yeah, it's unreal.
I guess you still pinch yourself. It must be.
I mean, secretly, yes, definitely, because obviously we'll just under the circumstances, of the whole journey. And then obviously getting to the final itself, and then in the final itself, you're looking at the game and just watching it go past. And obviously, I was aware a long way before that I was going to be starting. So you're just waiting for your time, waiting for your chance, thinking, when's he going to call me on? And then just how it all just unfolded after that. It's 1-0 down, and then obviously to turn around and go and win it 3-1. It's almost like we won it comfortably in the end, but yeah. It's just incredible.
But you're writing yourself short there, because I know it's a team effort, but you had two assists to your name, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, technically I had two definite assists. I mean, some people are saying three because I kind of made the defender head it onto the bar, my presence and that. But nah, I mean, yeah, definitely two assists. Obviously, everyone was expecting the goal, but I mean, two assists and to bring the trophy home is unbelievable.
It's amazing. As we said, like coming from the Isthmian League, to be a team above you anyway, but to be the kings of non-league in a season where you really haven't had the opportunity to have a consistent sort of schedule, because we haven't actually played a competitive league game since what, November, I don't think, is it?
Yes, I think league got null and voided, I think, October, November, and it's just literally the manager was saying we've had games where it's like every month, every 6 weeks, and to keep yourself ticking over, and you're playing against teams that are still active. Up until I think February was the non-league South and North, and obviously the conference has carried on going. So it's literally been unreal. A lot of people saying you can write a film about it, and you probably could.
Yeah, do you think, Chris, that having the league stop took away that distraction, and you was able to concentrate on the trophy as your only one way of playing and having competitive games? Did that sort of give more hunger?
I think mentally it did. Mentally it did, because obviously we approached every game knowing that, listen, if we lose, then evidently we're done for months. So mentally, it definitely gave you a stronger approach to games. But physically, not a chance. Physically, we'd want to play every single week, Tuesday, Saturday, because your body keeps ticking over. I mean, I can tell you now, 2 days after the final, my body's in bits. And I only played half an hour, so Lord knows how the rest of the boys feel. But so physically, you'd want to keep ticking over. And obviously, we were training as much as we could, but it's not the same as match fitness. When you're playing games week in, week out, it's totally different.
I mean, it's been a crazy, crazy season, whichever way you look at it in any way. But for you personally, Chris, you started at Hornchurch, then you stopped playing there. I had that spell at Dartford as well, where you played quite a few games in there. And then suddenly it's back to Hornchurch again because Dartford, you know, have stopped as well. How easy was it to move between those steps each time, going forwards, backwards, stop, start, all the way through?
So I don't live too far from Dartford. So going to in regards to jurisdiction, it wasn't a problem. It wasn't a problem. Obviously, the two clubs spoke to each other. The two managers were really cooperative with each other in regards to me going on dual registration. And then I think the only time there was a little bit of turbulence was obviously the Maidstone game, because obviously I genuinely thought I was going to be a Hornchurch that day. And then I ended up being with Dartford. And so it was, I mean, that was probably the only turbulence we had. And then after that, obviously, the league got stopped anyway. So for Dartford. So it was a case of, Hornchurch always looked at me as he's one of ours, and we're ultimately loaning him because he wants to go and play football. And if we carry on going and we need him, then we'll ask him what he wants to do. And me and Stimmo have been transparent for the whole time, and he's been unbelievable with me. And so it was easy for me to transition from going from one to the other. And ultimately, yes, our Conference South is a higher league, but I didn't find the challenge of the Conference South any more of a challenge than the Isthmian Prem, because the teams in both leagues are of good calibre.
And talking about Stimmo as well, Mark Stimpson, he's not had the best of times in a couple of clubs he's gone to, but that knack of winning the FA Trophy just seems to be something he's got.
It's actually a joke. Like I said to him, how do you win this five times? Like, you've won it. Like, three on the spin is a massive achievement. I think two different clubs, but to win it five times, it's insane. Insane. Like, football clubs don't win competitions that many times with one manager always winning it. But him, they call him now their FA Trophy King, literally, because he's just got the knack of it, and it's just unbelievable how he manages to keep churning out teams that can win this trophy.
Apart from the huge result Saturday, Mr. Dixon, what game?
That sounds very polite.
I'm a very polite gentleman. What would you say the best game on the run, which really gave you the platform to build to the final, was? Was there any game that you were like struggling in and you had to pull it out of the fire?
So, for the boys, I think it was Maidstone. I watched that game. So I was watching that game. I think Dartford had well in that day, and I wasn't involved. So I was on the phone watching the Hornchurch Maidstone game. And I think the Maidstone game was really one where I felt like it was just up and down. And I think they really felt like they had to dig deep for that one. Me personally, it's got to be Notts County. Notts County was, for me, that was the pinnacle. That was when you knew something magical is happening here, because it was the first. I remember I was on the bench watching for the first 20 minutes. We didn't touch the ball. It was just like they were just all over us. The ease of them scoring. I think Wrighty pulled out an amazing save, and it was just like, whoa, this could be a Mullerin. And then once we settled and we got the first goal, it was a lucky goal and such. I mean, you need a bit of luck in this run. But once we got the first goal, it was almost like, okay, cool, something could happen here. And even when they went 3-2 up, and I think they had a chance to go 4-2, and Mickey Parcell blocked on the big line. At that point, it was like, whoa, okay, switch on, let's go for that final push. I could hear Mickey saying, no regrets, no regrets, no regrets. And I'm thinking to myself, this guy has lost his marbles. Like, because they just scored and you're screaming no regrets. So I'm like, wow. And that epitomizes that team, the team spirit. And it epitomizes what we're about. And I mean, go down the other end, we score, make it 3-3, and it's like penalty time, here we go. And I think within the group, we knew penalties was going to be our best chance, because thank God it was an extra time, because it was like Notts County could have possibly gone to another gear. But I think with penalties, it's luck of the draw. You don't know who. But deep down, we knew we had a fantastic goalkeeper, and we also knew we had confident penalty takers. Each and every one of us was confident we were going to score. And obviously, I didn't think it was going to come down to me, if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. Didn't think it was going to come down to the fifth one. I said to Wrighty, "You're going to save two or three of these," and he was like, "I will get one at least." And I was like, "All right, cool." Knowing that you got one, obviously it fell down to me.
And what went through your head? What you were stepping up to send Hornchurch to Wembley, no pressure. I know it's an ultimate professional as you are. What was going through your head? Because there's a lot riding on that.
I'll be honest with you. I didn't feel any pressure. I wasn't thinking about anything other than don't let the boys down. And do what you do, put it in the corner you put it in, and don't let the boys down. And that's all I was thinking. I don't even think I was thinking about Wembley. No. I don't think I was even thinking about it. It was just literally a case of don't let the boys down, because they've got so far. They've got so far with and without me. And if I don't score, obviously they still got to go and score anyway. But it was a case of just don't let the boys down, and let's get the show on the road and carry on pushing through, and let make sure this journey doesn't stop.
Yeah.
Was it one of those, Chris, where you're walking up to it and you make your mind up which way you're going to go and stick to that decision and not change your mind and just make sure you get it on target?
So it was one of them, all the players know what corner I go. So they all knew where I was going. It was just a case of, does the keeper know where he's going? And is he going to have to stop it? Because everyone knows, tends to know what corner I'm going to go. I think the one time I changed corners, I missed. So I was like, nah, everyone knows where I'm going. I'll be honest with you, I didn't aim to put it in top bins. It obviously went top bins, but it was just a case of, I've chosen my corner. I know I always go that corner. And obviously, let's make sure he hits the back of the net.
And the best thing about it was we saw the John Cena, You Can't See Me, which I used to love you doing, mate, when you were down the valley as a wrestling fan. I love seeing that every time you do it. Just please don't do that down at Woodside next season in front of me. So I can imagine you just goading me by going like that. All right, James.
That's my celebration, isn't it? So,
I love it. I love it. It's such a quality celebration.
So basically, you can blame the Notts County goalkeeper for not doing any research on your penalties then, Chris, like they're doing in the Premier League. They have lists, don't they?
He probably didn't know who was taking the pens. And I mean, I won't say he didn't know who I was, because he should know who I am. but I don't think he could have stopped it. It was one of those penalties where it was just like, and even I was surprised where it went, because I was going for that corner. I wasn't aiming for top bins, but I was surprised where it went. I was like, whoa, like, okay, like, that's gonna look good on camera.
Yeah. Pete was extra happy because he's a Forest fan, so he was even more happy that Hornchurch put County out.
I turned up at County, and I think a lot of the boys were overwhelmed. And I said, well, I've played at Forest, so I know what it feels like to be in that stadium. So this isn't gonna be something that should be that daunting. But obviously for some of the boys in the team, it's a daunting place to go to a place where it's an empty stadium as well. And you're looking around thinking, wow, like this, and you're looking at the length of the pitch and the width of it, and thinking, this is mad. So I mean, you try your hardest as a senior player to obviously just calm everyone down, get them focused, and then go and get the job done.
Where do you sit with a mindset of that? Because I mean, for example, in the Premier League, there's an extraordinary amount of away wins. Like, obviously, if you go into an away stadium, obviously the fans would be expected to be on your back. How would you kind of like feel about that?
I mean, I think it benefits you, if I'm honest, if you're an away team. I think it does benefit you because the fans for home teams are the extra push. They're the extra push. They're the people that when you need a little kick on the backside, a little bit of motivation. Definitely, you'd love to have your fans. You'd love to have your fans there. But I mean, the fact they weren't there that day was great for us, because the way they played Notts County in the 20 minutes was, this is mad. If the fans were here as well, wow. Mm. But I'm looking forward to obviously having the fans back next season, because it's not the same. It's just, football isn't the same without fans. Yeah.
No, I totally agree, Chris. And I think, you know, I watched the cup final the other week. It was one of the few televised games I've watched, because I've been watching it and bits of it. And it's been like, it seemed like training matches to me without the atmosphere, the fans and everything. So, you know, it's I can imagine how difficult it is for players to get themselves up. But obviously, Hornchurch have done a great job in doing that.
Yeah, it definitely does. Obviously, we don't get the massive amount of fans down at Hornchurch anyway. So, but when we do, you can feel their presence, and you know they're always goading with the opposition fans as well. So it's all of that is part and parcel of the game, and you want to have that feeling, that presence, that you're actually in a match. But obviously, like you said, it feels some games you're watching, you're thinking, this is like a training game. It's like a resi game. It's just going through the motions. It feels like that. And that's because you haven't got the fans' presence there. And when you do have the fans' presence there, suddenly things get turned up a little notch.
I get a feeling that might change next season. I think you might have a few more fans next season.
Well, listen, we sold 3,000 tickets.
And I know, it's amazing.
And some of our fans didn't even get tickets, and they were fuming. I heard that. Wow. I could see the Twitter feed going mad, like, where will these people come from? And obviously, it's so many players' families that, like, my family alone, literally, we were allocated 40 tickets each. Yeah. And I was like, I said to the chairman, that's not going to cover my family. My immediate family, with my brother, my brothers, my sister, my son, my niece, nephew, that's 13 to 15 people already. So I'm saying, something like, whoa, hold on a second. This is my mom, my dad. So I'm like, I'm going to need more than 40 tickets. So it's difficult. And obviously you want to obviously invite as many people as possible that haven't seen you play football. as well, who haven't had the opportunity to get down there. I've been playing abroad a lot of my career, so a lot of people haven't seen, I've been able to have the opportunity to come and see me play abroad either. So it's difficult. And obviously, I definitely had sympathy for a lot of the fans that didn't get tickets. But at the same time, I'm glad they were supporting us from home, and I'm also glad that we did manage to get to sell the 3,000.
Did your family not be able to afford televisions back in the day, Chris? Large family.
Do you know what? I'll be honest with you, my family have come to games and they've seen games, but obviously seeing games abroad, nah.
Yeah, of course, it's possible. All over there. Before they invented the dodgy streaming sticks and everything like that we have nowadays.
Right,
yeah.
So I'm saying, seeing Cyprus games abroad, nah, no, not a chance.
Well, it's like the thing I said to you, Chris, when I messaged you, like Pete and I wanted to come and watch, but obviously we didn't want to take a Hornchurch fans ticket. And we thought, we looked at the plan, it said neutrals, but there was just no guidance on how we could get a neutral, because obviously non-league day normally, they'd have hundreds of tickets available, thousands of tickets available for neutrals. So it's a shame we couldn't come and do that. But, you know, it's great you had 3,000 people there.
Yeah, I mean, there was so many tickets that went out. And I think even the day that they said they were going to release tickets, there was only like 400 left. And we're like, what? 400 for the fans. And apparently there's a queue of like 600 to 700 people outside. Oh, and they obviously said so many of them have missed out. And it wasn't a nice feeling, obviously, seeing all the Twitter messages and stuff. Wasn't nice to see, because we want everyone there. And I, if I'm quite honest with you, I think they could have put more in.
You had the
FA Cup week before, 21,000. You're like, I'm thinking, well, if we can get 15, 20,000 people, we'll fill it.
Chris, can I pause? Please don't get Peter started, because every week he's been on that. He'll just go on a rant for about the next half an hour if you start him about fans again. And it's ridiculous, though, isn't it?
It is just literally the way that the FA treat non-league. There was no need for them to do what they'd done the weekend when they had the cup final the week before. They could have treated everyone on a level playing field, which was not done. And they had an opportunity, they've missed it. And again, excuse my French, but they're ballsed up.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I do agree with you, because I just think you can't have FA Cup final 1 week, 21,000. And yes, we all know Hornchurch don't get a lot of fans. Hereford probably get a lot more. But the bottom line is that you're going to have so many neutrals that are going to want to come out, and especially on the week of that we've been let out of lockdown, people are going to want to just come out and have a good day more than anything. And if they can get to a football match, it doesn't matter who's playing. I think a lot of fans from, I think it was Binfield?
Binfield.
They stayed. They stayed and watched the game. They stayed and watched our game, because they realised it's a day out. It gets socialised. We've been locked down for a year. It's been, like I said, it's been tumultuous times for everybody. So it's now's a good time to just open up and let people go and experience. If it is a football match, it's a football match, and go and let people enjoy it.
Well, there was one stage, I don't think you were even going to have any fans there. I think right at the beginning, there wasn't, which was ridiculous in the fact that we had the FA Cup final the week before.
Yeah, it was just like, what's going on here? Like, no fans. And then there was no way that they weren't going to let us have fans.
Yeah. So talking about the day, Chris, obviously you got to Wembley, you scored the winning penalty at Notts County away to send you to the final. What was the preparation in the week leading up to the final?
We trained once.
Okay.
And we trained once because we'd done that in the quarters, we'd done that in the semis. So, and I actually genuinely thought we were going to try again. And I was like, on a Thursday. Okay, cool. Cutting the hair off. So, literally, we trained on the Tuesday. We had a little meeting. And then, I'll be honest with you, all the camaraderie that's in the group chat kept us ticking over. There was so much banter flying in the group chat. Nashie's having interviews left, right, and centre. So Nashie's obviously saying, Nashie's, you think I'm not scoring at Wembley? I'm definitely scoring at Wembley, but everyone's getting onto him. So there was a lot of camaraderie going on anyway within the group chat anyway. So that got us through to the week. And I'll be honest with you, the week itself went so quick as opposed to the previous week. They just felt like they were dragging. And but leading up to the game, it was just like, look, Everyone was in the zone. Everyone knew what the job was. Like I said, the manager was fantastic with me personally, because he'd already notified me from before. Look, this is what the plan's going to be, and I was happy with it. So, and I think going, I think the night before was probably in the hotel, was when I started seeing nerves around people, and I thought, okay, now you start realizing, people realize this is going to be the big thing.
100%.
Just a couple of last questions for me. Number one, did you actually sleep the night before? Number two, You mentioned earlier about Notts County's big pitch. How big is the pitch? Because you hear it on the TV all the time. They go, how big the Wembley pitch is. Obviously, you said you're still in the state now after paying 20 minutes. So is it really that much of a difference to sort of, you know, generally, you know, Hornchurch's own pitch, or you've played at Worthing or Worthing's pitch?
I'd say I've played at bigger pitches. It feels like, well, I've played at pitches that I thought looked bigger. I know Norwich City is huge. I've heard Port Vale. I haven't played at Port Vale, but I heard Port Vale is massive. So Wembley, I think it's just a surrounding. It's the surrounding of the stadium itself. The actual pitch size isn't actually as big as you think it is. And I think, obviously, it's a common place that the pitches can only be a certain amount, certain width and a certain length anyway. So coming to terms with the actual pitch size itself wasn't a big deal. I think it's just the atmosphere of the fact that, wow, this is actually a huge stadium. And I think that's what you've got to adjust to first. And that was before the fans came in. Then when we came out for warm-up and we saw the fans there, I think everyone was like, whoa, okay, this is mad. Again, I've spoken to so many players and I was trying to talk to a few players the night before, and I'm explaining to them, like, obviously, this isn't my first rodeo. I've been here. I've played in big stadiums before. So I was trying to let them know, play the occasion. Play the occasion and think to yourself, you know what? I'm on a stage right now, and I want to put on a performance that people remember me for. And that's all you have to think about. Once you do that and make sure you get your first touch right, your first pass right, and you'll be fine. And you'll be fine. And the rest will take care of itself.
Was it your first time at Wembley?
It was my first time at Wembley. Though.
So what was that feeling walking in? Like, what was that feeling? Like, I can't imagine it from a player's point. I mean, I've been there 2 years ago in the playoff final for Cheltenham, and I was taken away, like, almost quite emotional. It must have been 10 times that for you.
For me, it was a case of I wasn't overawed.
Yeah.
By the surroundings. Everything was immaculately placed. Everything looked unbelievable. The setup was fantastic. I'm like, wow, this is what the Prem players have to deal with. It's a dream. They got in the changing rooms. They got charger sockets next to the seats. It's just like, I'm like, wow, this is decent. But I'd say overawed by the occasion, because I've had experience in it. But definitely the fact that my family was there, the fans were there, my son was there. It was more what took me. It touched me most. So, because I just felt like this is something that a lot of them haven't experienced. Yeah. I think the last time my son probably saw me in a big stadium was in a massive, huge stadium. It was probably one. So he doesn't remember. So he was saying to me, "Daddy, when are you going to go back to the big stadium?" I was like, "Okay, see, I'm working on it. And when it happens, get yourself ready, because it ain't gonna happen too many times after this."
But what a thing to tell his mates and like at school and everything. My dad's played at Wembley and won a trophy there. I mean, what an amazing thing to say.
Incredible. He told me that he's obviously, his teacher was Googling me and stuff, and I was like, gosh, what have you been saying? Like, but
are you taking the trophy into school for him?
I mean, I would have loved to, but yeah. I've got to try and get my hand, his hands off it first. I'm saying, yeah. So I've got a meeting tomorrow, and obviously we'll have a few pictures with both guests. Awesome. And then obviously talk amongst us, and then obviously decide what's going to happen going forward.
And of course, Chris still can't walk at this moment in time.
I'll be honest with you, I woke up with pains in places, yeah, that I haven't felt for a while. I didn't get cracked in the ribs, so why are my ribs hurting me? Like, it's just general match fitness. There's nothing to replace it. You can't do anything about it. You can run, do 5K runs as much as you want, stay as fit as much as you want, train as much as you want. When you're in a game and there's somebody physically up against you, there's nothing will replace it.
Yeah. So, Dicko, what's next for you, mate? Are you stick around Hornchurch? Are we going to see you next season in Isthmian, or are you trying to push on to the league above? Like, I know when we spoke to you earlier on in the podcast series that you said you're going to play until your body tells you not to. So, I hope I can see you because we keep on saying we're going to have this drink and like a photo after game. It's not happening at this rate, is it?
I mean, it feels like it's telling me not to at the moment. So, I'd say because of the null and void, the last two seasons, I've got to make up for 34 goals, so I'll be kicking on again next season.
Excellent.
I'd love to say it will be at Hornchurch, and more than likely it will be. However, football's a funny game, and anything could happen. I mean, I'd love to get Hornchurch promoted, and because I think like the fans deserve that as well. They were given them the trophy. And I think they deserve an extra.
Mate, you've had your trophy now. Worthy need a trophy. Can you share it about a little bit? Come on. You had one, mate. Don't be greedy now.
I would love to get them promoted. I mean, a lot of people said, how can you go and beat all these teams in higher divisions than you and then not win your league? So exactly. I think that is the challenge. I've already spoke to a few of the management and they've said, well, obviously we've got to go and retain the trophy. I'm like, retain? I'm like, listen, this is a once in a lifetime thing. I don't know if this is going to happen again. So
amazing.
We'll see. We'll try. But I mean, for me personally, it's just, I'll be going for at least the next couple of years, as long as the legs can go.
Well, hopefully we can see you in person and have that drink after a game. It'd be really nice to see. So are you going to, if Boris allows you to, are you going to be getting a bit of Cypriot heat this summer? Not playing football?
I am planning to go out to Cyprus. Obviously, with CAD PT, my business, we're trying to obviously branch over there, do a retreat for a few of our clients and whatnot, if Boris allows, and then just kick on from there because I've got to start transitioning from playing the game to obviously teaching the game as well, and obviously getting that. That was another bonus for me. I obviously got tickets for a lot of my kids that I coach, so they came to see that as well, and that again. It's inspirational for me to see them in the stands looking down at me and thinking, oh my God, he doesn't just talk a good game. He actually does. It was unbelievable. That was amazing for me as well. So, I mean, yeah, hopefully go and get some Cypriot sun and then roll on August 14th. We go again.
Well, Chris, once again, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And, you know, you've become a real good favourite of this. So if you want to appear next season, we'd love to have you back, see how your summer's gone and everything like that. But on behalf of everyone at the PNLP, we're absolutely buzzing for you, mate. And congratulations.
Anytime. Thank you for having me. Anytime. And just for you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, mate. You see my wrestling belts in the background there. There you go. I'll bring one down to you.
I love it. Yeah.
That's why you moved your camera.
Yeah, I know. You've got to show them off now. There we go. Chris, thanks so much, mate. You look after yourself.
Take care. No problem, man.
Have a lovely summer.
Take care, guys.
Are you PNLP?
So it was so amazing to speak to Chris yet again. And we all agree that he's such a good guy to come on the podcast. And I think Ian and Pete, me and Trev obviously met him before, but what a good guy.
No, absolutely superb. He's honest, straight to the point. Loving to bits.
Yeah, and as I said on there, I just really hope I don't see the John Cena celebration down at Woodside next season with him scoring a hat-trick against us yet again or something like that. But we'll wait and see. But in other news of champions, Sutton up to the EFL League 2. They won promotion this weekend from the National League. So Trevor, the match that me and Pete and you are going to next weekend and Johnny, it's just going to be an exhibition match, really. They haven't got anything to play for. I was quite looking forward to it going down to the last game of the season. Great, great result. I rooted for them in the last podcast, didn't I, Trevor and Ian? So I'm quite happy at that. They managed to keep their games in hand. And being a Worthing fan, having Callum Keeley, David Adjaboy, and Omer McGill, three former Worthing players, now lifting the trophy and being promoted with them.
Yeah, so I think they've done really well. Like you say, you did root for them. And I think with their games in hand, I thought they actually had sort of blown it a little bit with the run. Stockport and Hartlepool were both on. And Torquay came a cropper against Barnet on Saturday. So we handed Sutton the chance to win it in front of their own fans yesterday, which I guess actually it's better they won it in front of their own fans, you know, at Gander Green Lane yesterday, rather than they come to Barnet next week and they've got to watch it on a stream while we put three past them.
Well, they were definitely the better team yesterday. I thought by quite a long way. Like I say, obviously we were a bit partial because of ex-Worthing players, but I thought it was thoroughly well deserved yesterday. And Omar Bugiel ran the line really well for Sutton, and he deserved his man of the match prize.
I think as well to point out as well, Hartlepool yesterday, that was only their third defeat in the last 20 games. So the ground they made up to even put themselves in the race has been fantastic. I mean, Torquay were, I think Chris Boxing Day was it, they were clear by about 10 points. So for Sutton to claw that back as well, Torquay to get in there and take it to the game bar one, and Stockport for being that close for, you know, two or three games before that, been a fantastic race this year. It really has.
No, it has. It's the only bit of non-league that we've really been able to sort of keep an eye on. And, you know, I guess, as I've said to you off air, Trev, it's future looks a little bit brighter for Barnet after this new management change by the looks of it.
Slowly, it's getting there. It's getting there. Yeah. I mean, we've got two more games to go, Tuesday night and Saturday, both at home in front of our own fans for the first time since December. I think we had two games, I think we had then, sorry, with fans in. So I think they deserve to give us two performances, though, after what they've dished up this season, to be honest. And Simon Bassey, Dave Anderson made a big difference. Like, you know, Saturday at but Torquay, actually, I mean, Torquay in front of their own fans, I don't think they, I'm not sure if they had them in December, but they were really nervy when we should have been two or three up before they'd scored. And then all of a sudden, as Simon said in his post-match interview, looked up at the scoreboard and we're 2-0 down after 23 minutes, thinking how yet. We came away with a draw, 2-2, but we had two really good chances in stoppage time as well. Both sides were pushing for a winner, and we really should have won it, but gave Sutton the opportunity. They took it. Just a shame that plastic pitch's got to come up.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, Trev, we haven't been to a Barnet game before together, and obviously you're kindly offered to drive us up there. Pete, we haven't seen what he's like when Barnet lose, so I know he always says our typical Barnet, but we haven't actually seen what he's like in person, so it could make for a bit of an awkward journey home, you never know.
Have you not read my blogs this season? There's been enough of them.
Yeah, okay, yeah, he takes it out. He's a keyboard warrior instead.
I was about to say his Twitter's full of it. So.
Yeah, no, that's true. But, no, Trevor, you quite rightly said, sadly, due to EFL rules, Sutton have got to rip off a nice 3G pitch, which, as we've seen today on some of the non-league pages, has come to the end of an academy or a youth training system that uses the pitch, and you know the future of their sort of training school now. They're going to try and fit classes in around the area. But this is one thing that maybe needs to be looked at now and modernised. You know, maybe there should be a period of time that they have to transition to a new pitch, or, you know, some options, because to just do that, and it affects so much business. And I know from, I'm sure, you know, Horsham and, you know, Worthing, we get a lot of extra money from that, extra having that 3G pitch.
I think everybody does. I mean, I'm not quite sure. I had heard a couple of people ask, are Sutton moving it somewhere in the community? I don't know. I know should Bromley make the playoffs, and themselves go up to the EFL, they've also got the same issue of ripping up their pitch, but their plastic is actually going to go onto a pitch behind the stadium. So it's still actually going to be a part of the club while they put grass back down again. Whether that's an option for Sutton, I don't quite know. Possibly not Gander Green Lane, but maybe somewhere else, you know, around where
in
they
that
are
area.
Would be, you know, fantastic.
Yeah, I think the strange thing is, like you say, Sutton are promoted, they've got a plastic pitch, so the rules of the Football League say you've got to put grass down. Now, if they get relegated next season, hopefully, touch wood, they won't, but imagine having to rip that up and then you get relegated.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I like what Bromley are being able to do with theirs, because obviously if the same thing happened to them, then I imagine if they wanted to, just move the pitch backwards again. But I guess as well, it's about space. It's about whether how much it's going to cost to move it from one and put it back down again, rather than just rip it up and it's gone.
They need to do what Spurs do and have a floating pitch and float it out.
I think
imagine that in non-league.
Yeah. Spurs sold their pitch to Leeds, though.
No, that was a training pitch. That was a pitch we were cultivating at Hotspur Way.
I thought there was a replacement.
It was a pitch that they'd cultivated at the training ground to actually replace the main surface at the end of the season. But obviously, because of the way Spurs works and can sit underneath and still grow under lights and everything, Leeds did look like they got a bit of a bum deal though.
They're not just transferring footballers, they're now transferring pitches and have a transfer. Yeah, you can imagine Jim White on football pitch transfer deadline day.
Daniel Levy's got price for everything. If it, you know, if it's not literally nailed down, it's sellable.
Yeah, no, it's
I mean, I do feel super sorry for Sutton in that instance where they've obviously got to change that pitch, given that they're, you know, that they're what, semi-professional, or they're not fully a fully professional side.
Mm.
So they've already got the financial constraints of obviously presumably going fully professional on top of having to, you know, change their pitch.
I guess we could look at Harrogate though, and Harrogate have made a success of their first season in League Two, and they had to rip up their pitch if I'm not mistaken.
They have, you know, but as you mentioned earlier, with Worthing, Maidstone do it a lot with how much they've got going on their pitch all the year through, the amount of benefit that takes away from the actual community, not just the football club. You know, it's the whole wider aspect that, you know, above the National League, it's just not thought about, is it? Because, you know, there's drips of TV money that you get right down to that level, which are more than what you're going to get in the National League. You know, that would compensate for a lot of clubs for losing that sort of stuff. But it's those kids that have been, you know, maybe at Sutton, maybe been playing there for, you know, 8 or 9 years. You know, Simon Bassett, the Barnet manager, is someplace for Sutton United under-15s. You know, they don't live very far from the stadium. So that might be something that now they don't train there, they don't play there, they've now got to go and find somewhere else to go. But, you know, potentially, he's been going there since he was 8 or 9 years old. That's a long chunk of life for a child, you know, and routine that they've known. And bang, just like that, in the space of 42 league games, it's gone.
Yeah. It made me think, like, looking at grounds like Horsham's brand new stadium that they've had for 2 years now, there's room around where they've built it to make me think, I wonder if Horsham were to be successful eventually and move up to the Football League, would they move one of those pitches to another part of the ground? You know, like you said, like Bromley are looking at putting it behind, and maybe a lot of these newer stadiums, or when there's land, they might be able to. But if it happened to Worthing, we wouldn't have nowhere to go. It would be probably donated to a local or moved to a training centre or something.
Yeah, we wouldn't have anywhere to go. But I noticed with Horsham, there is a lot of pitches behind Horsham as well.
They hire out
where the hire out and things. Mm. So there is plenty of room out Horsham. And I'm just a bit worried that Ian's not paid his electricity bill this week.
I can't be asked to turn my lights on.
He's further north than us as well, and it looks like it's lighter here than it is up in Cranley right now.
It is rather wet outside.
Yeah, South Downs are protecting us at the moment. We've had our rain and it's moved up. But I mean, just going back to Sutton, guys, really great for them, really massive achievement, and I'll look forward to seeing them. And I spoke to Callum Keeley, who's one of the players that went from Worthing, and he's going to be at the game on Saturday, so I look forward to catching up with him and the other Worthing players, which will be nice. But yeah, good luck for next season, I think.
Definitely hopefully they give a good account of themselves, you know, don't end up anywhere close to that bottom two, and don't make a swift return to the National League. Nice to see, in a way, another non-league club go up rather than the Football League clubs that are sitting in there. But there is bouncing, becoming a right bottleneck, though, with so many Football League clubs stuck in there, though.
So who do you think is now going to be for the playoffs? Who's going to win?
Oh, well, depends if Eastleigh or Bromley gate crash. Eastleigh got game in hand on everybody, which they play on the Tuesday evening. They win their last game, they'll be in. You've got in there Chesterfield, Wrexham, Stockport, Hartlepool. That's a tough ask to say who's going to do that, really is. I couldn't pick one, not out of that lot. They've all timed their runs perfectly, I think. You know, Eastleigh, if they get in there as well, would have timed it. I mean, I think when I spoke to Ben Strevens yesterday, Eastleigh win their last two games. That's 8 wins out of 9, which playoff form, you know, momentum with them. So if I'm gonna pick one out of the sides I've seen play against Barnet this season, I would pick Hartlepool. Although I was impressed with Torquay when we played them earlier in the season, not so impressed with them yet on Saturday. But, you know, it's playoff football. Who dares wins?
Yeah. Very true. Do you ever think, I was going to ask you, Trevor, obviously the League Two clubs felt it was unfair that teams were getting promoted from the National League when there was no relegation from the National League. Is there anything coming of that? Have you heard?
No, Grimsby have turned around and went, no, actually, we'll take our relegation quite gracefully. I think a lot of clubs turned around and went, you've had 46 games to win. You haven't. You finished in the bottom two. Sorry, but that's, you know, that's your time. Southend have been quiet. I think it seemed to come a lot more from Grimsby. So I can't see anything more coming of it, no.
I thought it was a bit ridiculous, to be fair. But, I mean, clutching straws.
I can understand it a little bit because of, like, no relegation going down from the National League and, you know, nothing happened underneath that. But I think because of how the National League is structured with so many full-time sides, you know, you were asking, you know, you were asking something. You know, I think one of the scenarios was they were asking for four to get relegated next year. So two chairmen were asking the other 22 clubs in their league, I think it is, plus the two that were going to come up, to say, actually, chaps, no one's going to go down this year, but do you mind voting for another two relegation places that you could end up in next year? Of course, they're all going to turn around and go, oh, I don't think so. Off you go. Thanks very much, and bye-bye. See you in a few years' time.
The Premier Non-League Podcast.
Well, Trevor, you've led us quite nicely on to restructuring there. So we have had confirmation of the restructures. Any standout restructuring to you?
A few stick out locally. Lancing and Littlehampton going up. Definitely Littlehampton needed to move. You know, the year before they were unbeaten. They've won every game, I think. I'm not sure if they've drawn a couple. This year they were unbeaten again, but they were thumping teams 6 or 7-0 every week, which isn't healthy for them, for the teams they were beating. So I'm pleased they've gone up. A few people questioned Guernsey getting the lateral movement, but I looked at the clubs they're competing against in their division, and a lot of them are closer to both Gatwick Airport and Heathrow Airport.
So. It was interesting when you brought that up in the group, in our group chat, because I never really thought of it like that, but you're completely right. The flights to Guernsey from Heathrow and Gatwick.
Yeah, and obviously those clubs being a bit closer is less travelling for those clubs to get to the airport. For example, Guernsey last year were playing Herne Bay and Whitstable from the Kent coast. You've got to travel all the way, to Gatwick, you know, get on a plane. They pay the transfer to the hotel as well. Then they come back again, and then you've got, you know, I imagine the coach back to those clubs. That's a lot of mileage, and it should, I think, benefit Guernsey in the long run financially. Money-wise, Pete, you're right there. I've seen, I think, a few clubs at step 5 and 6 have appealed against being laterally moved. But whether that gets offered to someone else, whether they stay down in their division, I don't know, but they've got plenty of time to hear the appeals and, you know, decide whether it's going to be, you know, yeah, we'll change you for someone else, or we'll, you know, you're going to have to stick with what you've got and win promotion.
What league did Littlehampton go to and from? What step are they from?
Step 6 into step 5.
Okay, cool. So that's basically where Lancing were, and then they pushed up into that league. Fantastic. Well, another sort of, I'm sure, hopefully in the coming season, we might be able to go and see a couple of their games around the area, which will be nice to expand our knowledge of non-league. And one other team, which was an interesting one, you think they're going to be in Premier League in a few years' time of a 26,000-seat stadium, was Hashtag United. They've stepped up as well. I know Ian's got a little soft spot for Hashtag.
Well, I just like the fact that they're disruptive in an archaic industry.
I just can't imagine Gary Lineker going, now we're Hashtag United versus Manchester United. It just doesn't sound right.
It's worth noting as well, they've signed like a five-year deal with Hummel as well.
Oh, really? See, they make some really nice kits, Hummel, because they do a Cheltenham's kit at the moment, and they actually make bespoke kits. So it'd be interesting if they actually do bespoke ones for Hashtag.
Well, Adidas did.
Did they?
Yeah, Adidas did. So, I mean, I would like to see what their sort of merch sale was compared to sort of a football league side. I'd be interested to know what kind of business they're pulled, because big companies are clearly interested in what they've got to offer.
Well, it is. I think it's interesting to say about kits, because I noticed this week, and Johnny's not here to speak about it, but Horsham have put two kit designs out on Twitter, and I think that can be dangerous sometimes, because fans of rival clubs, like maybe possibly some Worthing fans, are voting for the kit that looks the worst out of them, and it could end up being the wedding / bridal party gown type shirt for the coming season.
My God,
but there's always a risk of doing that, isn't there? They should maybe have sent it into an email chain of members of the club, but put it on Twitter, and if they go by that result, which they say they're going to, they might have a sash. Brighter B. So I think, Pete, if we go to Horsham away next season, we've got to get all the away boys to have a, we'll get a Brighter B sash to wear over the shoulder if that ends up being the kit.
Do you know what? When I saw it the other day, I couldn't resist, and I just put it in a group and I said, you know what to do, boys.
Do you know what's worse about that kit is the fact that the sash is like a honeycomb pattern in relation to the hornet. But then they've got hornets on the sleeve as well.
See, we've got a honeycomb right down the middle of ours, but it looks like a flipping tire track, and someone's just like driven all over the team like they have done most of this season.
How do you know they didn't do that beginning of the season, mate? They laid them all out on the pitch and got some like 4x4 to
crazy.
Go over them.
Oh, horrendous, mate. Honestly, you know, sometimes some of these people that come up with kit designs, you just think, what on earth are you thinking?
No. Saying kit designs, I saw Inter Milan's fourth kit. Have you seen that?
The one with the Pirelli on the horizontal.
Yeah, and it's got different blocks of yellow, blues, blacks everywhere.
Yeah, that's dope.
Well, if anyone wants a decent kit, go to Loch Ness, number one. And number two, Man United's kit yesterday was absolutely awful.
What one were they wearing?
That black and white thing. Yeah.
I love the zebra one, mate. I love the zebra one.
Oh, I hated it.
It looks awful. It doesn't look like zebras running around a pitch.
No.
Thank you, Trevor, for your moral support.
I think it's quite interesting because a lot of these bigger clubs now are doing like third or fourth kits that are completely random and different than they ever have been before. So they're doing the first and second kit. I mean, I was a real big fan of Man City's away shirt this season with the sort of pattern on. I don't know what the kind of design is, but it's almost an Arabic type pattern. Is that what it is? Yeah. And I thought it looked brilliant. I thought it was just different from the usual.
Yeah, but the point being is the reason why you're seeing it in non-league as well is it's, you've got to, like, asking someone to fork over for the same colour shirt every single season is a massive stretch. Mm. The only way to differentiate your product and to still get people to potentially buy your shirt is to have sort of interesting away or third shirt. Mm.
Yeah, and it also gains traction throughout the world. We've seen plenty of times that kits of non-league teams selling out because they are. And that guy that Johnny interviewed from what team was that again? I forget. I do apologise. North Ferriby, they've got a kit that's sold out all over. So, you know, fair play to them. But moving slightly back to Wembley and stuff, guys, we forgot to mention the FA Vars final, which was also this weekend. And Warrington Rylands beat Binfield 3-2. Trev, you watched the match?
I did. Absolute cracker again. Bit like Concert and Heaven 3 weeks prior. It was, I think I've said a few times, I'm not sure if I said it on the podcast last time. Watching the two finals in a day is fantastic because you get all the endeavour, adrenaline and everything in the Vars game where you've got step five players and step six players that train a couple of times a week, you know, and normally those clubs haven't got the facilities when the weather gets wet. So they, you know, tend not to train quite so much during the winter months. And then when you get to the trophy final, you've got a little bit more guile, a little bit more craft because those guys are a bit higher up the ladder. But the entertainment that the Vars final, you know, gives is fantastic. But I mean, both sides were really good going forward. I think it was Elliot Neat that got hat-trick for Warrington. The last player to get the hat-trick at Wembley was Harry Kane, so he's in a bit of esteemed class there. Goals were well taken, you know, and Binfield were, you know, I say just as good as the two sides were the 3 weeks previous. It was really good. And to have fans back inside the stadium cheering them on, you know, as small as the amounts may be and everything, it was still really good to see. And hopefully next year it goes back to, you know, we can all go and get a seat and an overpriced burger or fish and chips or chicken strips or whatever they do these days at Wembley.
That's it, isn't it? It's one of those things. It's good. It's Wembley. They got the street food stands, I seem to remember as well, when I was there with Charlton, and they had like some Asian kitchen like noodles and stuff. I was like, who eats noodles? I mean,
it's very random.
I mean, I guess it's probably appealing for the England games when they have sort of just fair weathers that might turn up for some of the qualifiers, and they just I mean, an England friendly game is so boring as it is anyway. You know.
So it's an England qualification game, man.
To be honest, yeah.
That was boring.
Yeah, they are pretty boring. I've been to a cup over time, and it just is. I guess it feels a bit like a friendly, like the atmosphere of a friendly, really. But we got the Euros coming up very shortly, gentlemen. So we got something to look forward to.
Three weeks, is it?
Three weeks away. 3 weeks away.
Like
that.
Have you got your Panini sticker album?
Yeah.
God, I found a load of my old Merlin Premier League albums from back in the day, not that long ago, and it was brilliant to see. And how I used to go and complete my collection at the swap shop at Crystal Palace. So you got all your swaps, and then you went into the round and they had all these big boxes. You gave the ones over, and then they gave you the ones you needed to complete your album. And it was free of charge back then, but I can imagine they probably charge you hundreds now to go to them.
You've got probably Premier League written all over it.
Yeah. And he doesn't do it anymore now, Charlton.
This was even before Charlton were in the Premier League, mate. I've got one of the albums when Charlton's first league with good old Clive Mendonca and everything like that. But those were the days of sticker collection. They give the albums away free now, I see. They're giving away all the time, these Euro 2020. They've probably got so many left of them from last year. They've been rotting in a warehouse over the past year. Like all the merchandise. But gentlemen, I think that really wraps up this edition of the Premier Non-League podcast. Action-packed again. Chris Dixon, thank you so much once again for coming on and speaking to us. And we're, as we said, we're all absolutely buzzing for what Hornchurch have done representing the Isthmian League. And we look forward to bumping into you next season. But that kind of leaves us to sort of really sort of say, guys, I think the next one we're planning is after the non-league playoff final in about a month's time. And that will be it for the summer. Don't cry. I mean, I know all of you have been listening and in your thousands and tens of thousands over the past year, but we have enjoyed doing it. But we'll bring you one more before we go on a little summer break. I know Pete needs to go and get his R&R on a beach in the south of France with his getting his tan up. Or is that Saint-Tropez? Is that the bottle?
I need to do something, mate. I need to do something.
Yeah, getting before the football season starts. But as Pete, have you got any shout outs, or are you probably going to say no again?
I actually Saturday afternoon, I haven't got a shout out for anyone specific. I went to the Shield final, which was Loxwood against Lancing up at Stenning. So I had to leave 5 minutes before the end because I had a table booked at 5 o'clock in Worthing. So I missed the penalty shootout, but apparently Lancing won the Shield. So obviously on top of their promotion to win a Shield as well, they've had a good week.
On that point, Pete, they had some great viewing figures, didn't they, on your instant replay streaming? They had over 1,000 people.
Yeah, and there's 302 at the ground as well.
Brilliant. Yeah, it's really good, isn't it? I think, like as Chris said as well earlier, people will want to get out and watch games. I mean, you know, we did last week at East Preston, and obviously a few of us are going again to Barnet this coming Saturday. But that's all we've wanted to do since November, though, isn't it? It's watch some live football.
It's really nice that feeling to get back to be back in the grounds, even if the pitch has got daisies all over it.
And there's one last thing I need to check. Have I got a lift Saturday?
No. Well, this coming Saturday?
Yeah, to the football.
Yes.
All right, okay, cool. Sorted.
We are still recording, gentlemen, and for anyone listening, that is a little bit weird, but
okay. I was just checking. We've got plans for Saturday.
I mean, he could ask off the air or just a text message, but he has to do it when we're recording. Pete's trying to look popular.
Thank you.
Yeah, he's trying to look popular now, isn't he? Is he got a chauffeur-driven limo turning up?
Also, shout out to Lincoln as well for getting to the playoff final.
No.
they were non-league like 4 years ago.
Yeah, I know. I mean, in normal circumstances, I'd be all right about it. But the fact they conveniently got COVID when they were on a really bad run in the Football League, it did kind of make me laugh. But that's another story. I ain't bitter losing out on goal difference, but here we go. Back to non-league. And we'll look forward to seeing that Barnet game next weekend. But for myself, James, everyone else on the podcast, thanks for listening. Good night.
Good night.
Ciao.
The Premier Non-League Podcast.